This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC 211 took place on Saturday night inside the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, in front of 17,834 people. And Stipe Miocic is now one of five men in UFC heavyweight title history to make at least two consecutive title defenses. And myself and Daniel Galvan are going to recap this fight card here on this edition of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Also, we're going to talk about Joanna Jędrzejczyk with her decision win over Jessica Andrade, Damian Maia, a split decision win over Jorge Masvidal, Frankie Edgar's win over Yair Rodriguez, and so much more. But of course, before I bring in Daniel, I'll let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. Fight, your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, UFC 211 was a pay-per-view that we were extremely excited for. And, you know, yes, it had some matchups that maybe, you know, quote-unquote, did not deliver, particularly David Branch versus Christoph Jocko. But overall, I thought it was a very good UFC event.
Yeah, it wasn't the best thing in the world. It probably didn't live up to our expectations, but it was still enjoyable. It still was. You had some phenomenal fights on that TV prelim. Maybe you would want something more definitive in that main event on TV between Poirier and Alvarez, but that was real entertaining. You know, you could say Jocko David Branch wasn't good, but I just think you're not very educated, Jason. I think as an educated mixed martial arts fan, that fight was a stellar classic of technique. I thought that was amazing. But with that being said, the main event was dominant, Jason. Stipe Miocic, I mean, this guy has really put himself in a position to do something historic in the heavyweight division, one of the oldest divisions in the UFC, I guess the oldest division in the UFC, to tie that record. But more importantly, when you look at what he's done, Jason, in this fight, and the win over Werdum, the win over Overeem, heck, the win over Andre Arlovsky prior to the title fight. You look at that, you look at the heavyweight division, it's hard to find somebody other than Francis Ngannou that you think could be a significant test to stop Stipe and having a historic run.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about the UFC heavyweight title, the fact of no one has made three consecutive title defenses in this division. But I want to go back to something about the Branch-Jocko fight. And the one thing that bothered me about that fight, and has nothing to do with David Branch, it's Christoph Jocko when, you know, Branch is clinching up against a fence and he's throwing his hands up and trying to get the stoppage. Like, no, it is not the referee's job to get you out of that position. That is your own job. And so I lost, you know, a little respect there for Christoph Jocko. Like, no, it's not the referee's job to get you out of that position. It's no different than when a guy is on his back and essentially he's telling the referee to stand them up.
Yeah, that's really weird. And even when it's a situation where you're telling a referee to stand him up, I feel like if you're a referee, it almost makes you want to leave those two guys on the ground longer. It's like this reverse psychology type thing. I mean, having watched so many fights, having so many fights in the history, in the books, we hardly ever see that play out effective. All that really does is irritate viewers, and I assume it irritate the referee, because it almost, when you do something like that, it really just tells the referee that you do not like this position.
And the referee applauds. That was the thing that was crazy, and he did it a couple times in that fight where it's just like, the referee was so influenced by the fans and Jocko. I felt bad for David Branch because Branch is working his game. I mean, look, if you have watched David Branch recently, this is who David Branch is. He's a guy. Now, give Jocko credit when the fight was on the ground. You know, he was able to stop a potential submission attempt by David Branch. But, you know, I thought it was a clear 29-28 for David Branch. I did, you know, I'm not going to say it's a horrible scorecard if you have a 29-28 for Jocko, but I thought it was a pretty clear win for David Branch.
Yeah, I thought the third round was his. On the feet, that was an area where he wasn't super sharp at the beginning point. But I think the lack of volume you saw out of Jocko later on really allowed Branch to close it both there. And when it came to the clinch, the grappling aspect, that was Branch's domain. Don Turner was the referee in that bout. So way to go, Don. Way to go, Don.
I tell you, it was scary when I saw the official assignments before this fight card started. And I was like, oof, I don't know about this one.
Yeah, I tell you what. And you know, one of the refs, and he was the referee for the Skelly-Jason Knight fight. That sucks. Man. Jacob Montalvo is a guy who lives where I live, the Valley. He's like the jiu-jitsu expert down here in the Rio Grande Valley. And, that stoppage was absolute ass, Jason. I mean, how do you let a guy like that get beat up?
It's like I tweeted. I said, it's never good when the announcers are yelling to stop the fight.
Exactly. Yeah, that sucks, man. The one guy from my hometown, Harlingen, Texas, or San Benito, I don't know where he trained, but for him to represent and have a bad stoppage like that makes me feel real bad. I mean, Jason, if you were to power rank these referees, other than Herb Dean, who would be your number two? You got Montalvo, you got Turnage, Kerry Hatley, Chris Reed. Oh, this fight card's in Texas. What a shocker. Who would you say is who would you trust as a referee as you make your UFC debut against CM Punk?
I mean, you'd want Herb Dean by default, but the rest of them, I mean, oof, it's bad. I mean, the Skelly one was, I mean, he wasn't defending himself, and he was just getting, you know, punched in the face. I mean, that was a fun and exciting fight. I mean, sign me up for watching more. Jason. How about Jason Knight do Ho Choi?
Dude, that sounds like literally, I think, the greatest thing you've ever said. I mean, Jason Knight can make anything entertaining. He could read you a book and it would be great. This, when he's on his back, he's incredibly active. He does a lot of things that don't necessarily make sense in terms of what your expectation is. And that's so effective with his ability to do damage. He is an absolute pleasure to watch. He's on that list of fighters that you put on TV. When you have the opportunity, you know it's going to be great. It's almost, you think back to the way we thought about Nick Lentz, where he would be just boring against anybody, but it's like the immovable object against the entertaining force. And I do think the entertaining force, Jason Knight, could literally get a good fight out of anybody on the UFC roster. But Do Ho Choi, you're begging for a fight of the year type fight.
I'll give you another one. How about Brian Ortega?
Yeah, T-City, man. I think the thing with Jason Knight that makes him so special is like the ability to recover from a near finish. I mean, the head kick that he received and his ability to just return to form. And we saw some aspects of that in the heavyweight slobber knocker, by the way, which was just
great fight. I mean, that's just, it was a fun fight. I mean, and you look at, first off, Coulter better start to learn how to check some leg kicks.
True.
But what amazed me about him is the guy can barely stand there in the first round and going into the second round. And then all of a sudden, there was a point where Chase Sherman looks up to see how much time's left. I'm like, oh, man, not good in the middle of the second round. You're looking up to see how much time's left. And then here comes Rashad Coulter. Man, sign me up to watch that guy fight again.
Yeah, I love the warrior spirit. It reminds me of just a movie where you have the grizzled veteran cop taking down the bad guys. He gets shot in the leg and he's limping and he's going to take out the bad guy. Granted, in the movies, the cop usually wins. That did not happen with Rashad Coulter, but just a deserving fight of the night contender. Granted, it's not like, you know, Branch and Jutko or Maya and Masvidal or Jan Jacek and Andrade put up much of a contest. And maybe that's the reason why when I think of this card, I don't go super duper overjoyed with it. I think it may just be the placement of where these fights go because there's a bigger importance, I think, on the main card. If you have kind of a lackluster prelim and a special main card, one would likely think it was a special card. And then if you have a special prelims, which is what we had, I thought, and it is so-so main card, that's when you get something that leaves more to be desired. But when you really lay it out and you look at this heavyweight fight, you look at what we got out of Alvarez Poirier, and you look at the Skelly Jason Knight fight. I mean, those are three just fantastic fights.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I thought it was a good night of fights. But let's talk about the main event. Stipe Miocic defeats Junior Dos Santos via a TKO. You know, Stipe Miocic, I mean, is it an honest question to say if this guy successfully defends the UFC heavyweight title in his next fight that he is the greatest heavyweight in UFC history?
I think you would have to – it would be a tough one to dispute. It's one of those things where we like to get it in early, right, Jason? We like to say that they're the best ever before it's like super duper concrete definite.
Yeah.
I think he gets another win, and you have to look at the challenger he faces, by the way. You know, if it's Francis Juanu next for him, I don't know if Juanu at this point in time, even though he looks like a madman, just a destructive force, I don't know if he has the quote-unquote reputation to warrant Stipe being in there. I think, like, if he were to beat, and I know this guy isn't training or he's maybe injured, if he were to beat Cain Velasquez in his next fight, then you would look at that list of fighters, and if you were to finish him in the first round, you were to look at the list of heavyweights that he'd beaten, he would have beaten Verdum, Overeem, Velasquez, and Dos Santos. Those are the guys we think of when we think of the best heavyweights of all time. Now, the counter, Jason, would be these fighters are past their prime, but they're still a part of the top-tier heavyweight division. So, yeah, that's the elephant in the room, is Stipe has a real opportunity to go down as the best heavyweight of all time. And if you look at this fight, Jason, it wasn't close. You talk about avenging a loss. He beat Dos Santos so bad. I mean, Dos Santos was able to land just lethal leg kicks. That's always going to be a weapon in his arsenal. But Miocic did not allow JDS to find any groove, any rhythm whatsoever. This was just Stipe stalking him, closing the distance, bullying him, and finishing him in the first round.
I can't help but wonder, and I know that Rogan and Cormier were talking about this at the end of the broadcast, of how much the wars that JDS had with Cain Velasquez has ultimately taken out of him. In terms of maybe, you know, maybe that shot that Stipe landed that ultimately sent him to the mat, maybe, you know, it is a shot that would not have dropped them a couple years ago. That's something I kind of wonder about.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even know if I'd call some of those wars. Those were slaughters.
Beatdowns.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he looked pretty good in that 64-second victory. But in some of those five-round destructions, man, that was a type of fight where you could just know in the moment that was going to take a toll on him. And I don't know if that played a role. It's such a dramatic distance. We're talking a 4-year period in between that and now. But to me, it's not so much that you point to those fights as to why JDS may look like he lost a step. He may have just lost a step because he's up there in age. I mean, he's 33 years old, which is younger than Stipe. But the thing is, you remember him going all the way back to his first ever fight with Fabricio Werdum, where he basically sent Fabricio out of the UFC back then. And it feels like he has so much cage time. He's been in part of wars. And more importantly, he sure seems like he suffered a lot of injuries. And I feel like that type of thing we don't necessarily think about. But those injuries, battling back from them, has to take a tremendous toll, I think, on your prime.
Yeah, you know, it was tough to watch Junior in his post-fight press conference where, you know, you could tell the guy, you know, he says he wants to return quickly, but, you know, I think he would like to see him maybe take a little bit of time off. But, you know, naturally, everyone talks about what is next at heavyweight, what's next for Stipe. In an ideal world, it would be Cain Velasquez. But Cain is not 100%. My understanding is he's in the training room, but he's not training 100%. You know, and Stipe really did not kind of give a timetable of when he wants to return. Sounds like he's got, you know, there's some things he wants to accomplish here. You know, if it's not Cain Velasquez is next, that's where it's an interesting question, because you could look at the winner of Fabricio Werdum and Alistair Overeem, which is coming up here in July. I personally expect that Verdum's going to win that fight. You could then, as you look down the rankings, you've got Francis Ngannou, who currently does not have a fight, which, by the way, after these fights were over, he tweeted, Stipe is not a matter for me, LOL. So take that for the way you want to take that. Then you look at Derek Lewis. Of course, Derek's got that fight coming up in June against Mark Hunt. You know, to me, if I was going to rank them 1, 2, 3, you know, Cain would be number one. Number two would be Verdum if he beats Overeem. Number three would be Ngannou. Number four would be Derek Lewis. Now, I got some people who, when I put this out there on my social media, were kind of, you know, wondering why I didn't have Derek Lewis in front of Francis Ngannou. And a lot of it's just because the UFC is all in on Francis Ngannou. You know, Derek Lewis, I think that, you know, maybe Derek Lewis would be the guy that could maybe elevate Stipe a little bit just because of the way he promotes the fight, but he's got to get through Mark Hunt first. For Francis Ngannou, I think you would like to see him fight a top-tier heavyweight before putting him into a title fight, but my gut feeling says Stipe's next title defense is against Francis Ngannou.
Man, my gut feeling, if I had to lock it in, Jason, I'll go with Stipe versus Derek Lewis, just because, firstly, with Ngannou, I don't know if I want to waste that bullet quite yet with Ngannou versus the champion, because I don't think the momentum is there. And the upside for how much momentum you could get out of this cat is huge because of how exciting he is. I think you may want to put him out there on TV again and get people talking about Ngannou before he challenges for the title. That's why I would slot him behind Derek Lewis.
But who do you have him fight?
That's a phenomenal question.
I mean, like, okay, right now he's number five. I mean, are you saying that maybe it's either JDS or the loser of Verdum and Overeem? But then, if you're talking about either one of those options, how long are we talking about Ngannou being on the sidelines? This is a guy that I think if you're the UFC, you want him fighting in the next 2 or 3 months.
No, you're right. I mean, the ideal fight for him, I actually think, would be Ngannou versus Alistair Overeem. I feel like that's something you could really market, and it would be something that would be entertaining. Now, the timetable is questionable. The reason why I lean towards Lewis is you have a fight in June. He's headlining this fight against Mark Hunt. There's a great likelihood in my mind that Derek Lewis is going to go into New Zealand and put Mark Hunt away in the first round. And I think you could generate some momentum off of that, some buzz, and Derek Lewis does a nice job of talking himself into it. We're really discounting, I think both of us are, the Verdum-Overeem matchup, because at the end of the day, when you do look at the rankings, I mean, Verdum, the former champion with the win over a guy slotted where Overeem is, really deserves a title shot. But I think the reason both of us are discounting that fight, is because we've seen them already and they were finished in the first round, and neither of them necessarily have the type of personality that has translated to generating an audience. But more importantly, they were just demolished by Stipe.
Yeah, I mean, Stipe has been on this incredible run, and this guy has he has an incredible personality, which I just don't know, you know, and kind of a little bit of a teaser here. On the next episode of the MMA Insiders podcast, me and Sam Kaplan are basically going to talk about the UFC and whether they know how to promote a fight without two guys hating each other. By the way, speaking of promoting of fights, good or bad about what went down on Friday with Kevin Lee and Michael Chiesa? See, I'm in the middle because, look, you know, I don't think it's necessarily good when you see on every major, you know, sports website that this video's out there of two guys, you know, trying to throw down at a press conference. But then I'm like, fellas, this is a fight game. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do the same thing in the cage. I would say it's one of those dietary things. I love buffalo wings. Buffalo wings are delicious, Jason. But if I eat them every day, which I nearly did last week, I spent a lot of time on the toilet. I should have tweeted about it. I would have followed the Derek Lewis playbook, but you have to do it in moderation. A fight at a press conference, Jason, is like one meal at B-dubs. But if you do it every single time, that's when it becomes an issue. It hasn't been done every single time. So I would say no. Although, if I were the UFC, I wish the bigger name guys would fight because it's not like Chiesa and Lee doing a fight at a press conference is going to be big. It's just going to be two UFC fighters fight. Check this viral video out. Forget about it. If it was guys that people cared about, it would probably get more traction, and you can translate that to pay-per-view buys.
Here's the question. Will the UFC promote Cormier talking about Jones sandblasting prostitutes? Because, first off, before this statement was made by Cormier, I didn't know what sandblasting was.
What is it, Jason? What's sandblasting?
People go to Urban Dictionary and see what it is. I will say it was a conversation last time with the fellas I was watching the fights with. We were talking about it. You know, it's interesting. You know, Cormier, it seems like he's getting comfortable in himself to be this trash talker. You know, and then, of course, also, I think it's never good when you're the UFC. I mean, we talk about not good things with the Lee Chiesa thing. Is it a good situation when you have John Jones saying, I beat you up after a weekend of doing cocaine?
You know, I think very Scarface of him, but no, that's weird. Can you imagine if Tom Brady said this? I mean, sure, Tom Brady absolutely does cocaine. We know this, Jason. But can you imagine if he admitted it? That would be crazy. Yeah, that's it. It kind of reminds you, right, how weird we are in our little fight world. And if this sport was treated like the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, we would probably not see this. This would be like the biggest thing. First Take, Stephen A. Smith, his head would explode. LeVar Ball would figure out some way to monetize it.
But, all right. You bring up Stephen A. Smith. What's the odds Lee Chiesa is on First Take on Monday? I say 40% chance.
Oh man, that's a long show, bro. So you're, I would say 0% chance, Jason. 5% chance. You know they're gonna only talk about the NBA game that happens for the first. Because I don't know if you saw this video of this dude, the Wizards player, slapping him on the ass.
I did, bro. That was awesome.
Nothing Stephen A. Smith loves talking about more than Stephen A. Smith, so they're going to do that. I could see it on Sports Nation if there's anywhere.
Yeah, they do. Sports Nation does talk a lot of MMA on there. By the way, you know, of course, that press conference on Friday was about the summer kickoff, and you know, one of the questions we got here was pretty much in relation to that from Troy McClure, saying, "Do we think UFC 213 stays as is? It seems like a weak card for International Fight Week." Now, the plan was for this event to be headlined by TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt, but that fight is very much in doubt. Does not look like it's going to happen on July 8th, as Cody Garbrandt flew over to Germany on Friday to have another procedure done on his back. You know, TJ is saying that he'd be willing to go down to 125 to fight Demetrius Johnson. Sounds like Demetrius Johnson isn't too excited about that potential fight there, but you know, all signs right now point to Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko headlining the International Fight Week pay-per-view. You know, that to me, I think when we think of those July pay-per-views, we think of these huge pay-per-views, and to me, it's just another pay-per-view. I will tell you this: I if that ends up being the main event, I'm 1,000 times more excited about Friday night's main event of Justin Gaethje and Michael Johnson.
I mean, that Johnson Gaethje is likely to be a more enjoyable fight.
Oh, that's 1,000% guaranteed violence. I mean, if you have never seen Justin Gaethje fight, tune in on July 7th. This guy pretty much has openly said he does not care about long term brain injury, and he is going to go out there and fling some leather. Him and Michael Johnson were going back and forth after this press conference on social media. And I basically love the fact that Justin Gaethje basically says, hey, man, you do realize that I've made 1,000 times more money than you have fighting in the World Series, right?
Yeah. And Michael Johnson should have countered with like a picture of a Boys and Girls Club. Like, yeah, big crap.
Hey, man. Hey, Justin Gaethje's been making six figures a fight.
Yeah, I know.
I would take that in a heartbeat. You know, Michael Johnson's probably making, you know, guaranteed probably $70,000 a fight.
Yeah, some of these UFC paychecks are questionable. This Reebok deal, not very great. I think DJ versus Dillashaw would be awesome. I think that could save this card. I don't know if there's anything else out there in the ether that could, because it would have been on this card already.
Let's be honest about it. We're all waiting for July 29th.
Yes.
That's the pay-per-view we're all waiting for at this point. I mean, look, Holloway-Aldo, great matchup. Not going to sell on pay-per-view. Nunez-Shevchenko, great matchup. Not going to sell on pay-per-view to, you know, the hardcore UFC fan. That 200,000, you know, buys, yeah, that's what those pay-per-views are going to do. But Cormier Jones is the fight that he should sell over 500,000 pay-per-view buys and probably gets close to 1 million.
And Cormier Jones also is in a time of the year where there's a lot of oxygen out there in the sports landscape. It's going to be that in baseball. And
I mean, that week is pretty much the start of everyone's NFL training camp, so you have that going on. But in terms of live sports, there's nothing else going on.
Yeah, ain't no one watching NFL training camp Saturday night, and it's gonna be.
Oh, I bet you had live practice on NFL Network on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock. I bet you it still pulls in 500,000 viewers.
You're probably right, but the good thing is the NFL Players Union only lets players practice for 30 minutes a week, so no need to worry about that.
Look, people would watch players practicing in shorts and t-shirts in football. That's how much we love the NFL the United States. But, I mean, that's a fight that we all care about. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately due to timing reasons that fight can't headline the International Fight Week card and, of course, the whole Bisping GSP situation. And I just wish I could have been there when Michael Bisping got the news that, hey, you're fighting Romero now.
It would have been... like anytime someone sees a monster in a horror movie. Man, GSP kind of screwed over the UFC there. I mean, they were hoping GSP Bisping could be the fight there. And they didn't have a backup plan. I mean, Dillashaw Garbrandt is not like a great fight to headline anyway.
But here's the way to look at that fight. Is they were essentially promoting that fight for 13 weeks on The Ultimate Fighter. Because if you look at the Ultimate Fighter finale, there's already 8 fights announced for that card. It's very clear that pretty much there's going to be 1 or 2 fights from guys that are on that season, the Ultimate Fighter. It was about promoting Garbrandt and Dillashaw in that feud. And, you know, we'll see when that fight does happen.
What was the viewership for those shows? Do you know off the top of your head?
In terms of DVR, they're averaging just over 500,000, you know, viewers in terms of plus three DVR. In terms of the preliminary ratings, which is live plus same day DVR, it's averaging, it's a little over 300,000 viewers.
I mean, that's pretty bad.
But okay. No, but here's the thing. In terms of overall number, I can see where people say, oh, that's a bad number. But think about it. What else is FS1 putting on in that time slot that's going to draw anything near that? Only thing would be a live sporting event, okay? And the second thing is that show, it doesn't cost a lot for it to make.
No, you're right. No, when I say that's bad, it's not from the point of view of FS1. I just mean from the point of view of selling that fight. That's bad. It's like, I don't know if that resonates with anybody.
But if that season adds 50,000 additional pay-per-view buys,
it's worth it.
It's a success.
Well, okay, so 50,000. All right, 50,000. And how much is a pay-per-view? $60?
Yeah, $60. And then, of course, you got to divide that number by 2 because then you got the split between the UFC and the satellite and cable providers.
Hold on, I'm doing some math, Jason. I'm pretty sure. Oh, God. I think I really messed this one up. I think that's only like $3 million. So that's only $1.5 million that you add if you divide that by 2. So does it take $1.5 million to make The Ultimate Fighter?
No.
Okay. So I guess it wasn't that.
No, I mean, and The Ultimate Fighter is not going anywhere. And of course, it should be announced that on Friday, it was announced that starting on July 11th, there's going to be a series on UFC Fight Pass every Tuesday. It's Dana White's Contender Series or something along those lines.
It's called Dana White Fires a UFC Fighter.
And basically what it's going to be is used as friends to find new talent. It's going to be live every Tuesday with 5 fights from the Ultimate Fighter Gym. It sounds like it's, you know, going to be guys who just have a couple, and ladies who have a couple of fights. But, you know, personally, as someone who subscribes to UFC Fight Pass, I'm glad they're adding original content on there that ultimately gives me some sort of reason to keep my subscription going.
Yeah, and it's I can only watch so many Pride documentaries and fight compilations. Man, when the world, you know, when we have a nuclear war, you know the first thing that's going to, you know what's still going to be there? Cockroaches and the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, the Ultimate Fighter's not going anywhere. It's just not. But let's get back to these fights here at UFC 211. Co-main event, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Jessica Andrade. If I was going to sum up this fight in one word, dominance. I mean, Joanna showing how much of a technical striker she is. And Jessica Andrade, simply all she could do is brawl, and it ultimately shows how big of a step in competition she took from going from Angela Hill to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And no disrespect to Angela Hill, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I was talking myself into this being a compelling bout. I was talking myself into a, man, Andrade, she's ran through some people. She looked real good. And boy, this was a clean sweep. I mean, Jessica Andrade did look good in the first round, I thought. Still around that Joanna won. And from that point forward, Jędrzejczyk, just dominant. What she's doing in the strawweight division, she's going to go down as the best female fighter of all time. She may already be there. I mean, Amanda Nunes may give her a run for her money if Nunes continues to come out here and run through people in the first couple rounds of fights. But at this point in time, in terms of pure technique, hashtag in this point in time, when you look at pure technique, Joanna's just doing something special. She's got a captivating personality. Granted, not that people know her, but she's done a nice job of making uneducated Americans respect her last name and learn how to pronounce Jędrzejczyk. And for her to do that is an accomplishment of its own. I don't know what's next for her, man. She's done a phenomenal job of cleaning out this division. And it seems like that's a storyline for so many different champions, is they are so dominant that there isn't really a realistic contender. And headed into this bout, the odds are relatively close between these two fighters.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, and the best round Andrade has was that first round. I thought it was a close round, but I still gave the edge to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. But you look at Joanna, she has two wins over the number one contender in Claudia Gadelha. She has a win against Carolina. Yeah, she now has a win against Jessica Andrade. And then number four, it's Rose Namajunas, who has only won one fight in a row. You know, of course, she had lost previously to Carolina. I mean, I think ideally, maybe you would say Rose gets the winner of Claudia and Carolina, but then do you want to knock off, a contender there or not? I mean, Rose is to me the fight that likely gets made, but I can't see Rose beating her.
No, I couldn't, but it's the fight that should happen next. The reason why, I mean, you laid it out perfectly. Gadelha Kovalkiewicz versus Rose Namajunas would be the perfect setup. But you don't want to risk Rose, a really good challenger. In terms of ceiling, she's right up there with the big ones. She's 24 years old, great character, a great personality, her own woman. She's almost like a her own Furiosa from Mad Max. And you wouldn't want to lose that fight in exchange for another rematch with Kovalkiewicz or Claudia Gadelha. So that's why I think it makes a lot of sense to shotgun her to a title. I think the lead up to that fight could be real interesting if the UFC does a good job of marketing it, which is a big if. But it's a type of fight where I would actually put that one on TV to give yourself a real wide net to catch in terms of viewership. But looking at the way Joanna handled Andrade again, thinking about her versus Namajunas, it appears to be a fight that Joanna champion would once again defend her title. I mean, Joanna, to me, the only issue for her, the only thing that could step in her way is the cliche that people come up with when it comes to dominant champions. It's herself. It's complacency, getting distracted, being in a Fast and the Furious movie. Something like that, Jason, to me, is the only thing that could really stop her. When you analyze the women's strawweight division, you go from 1 through 15. Who to you, Jason, even like a long-term fit, sticks out to you as a hypothetical challenger to Joanna?
Cynthia Calvillo. That's the only one.
At 15, you're right.
I mean, but I mean, we're talking about for Cynthia, we're at least a year. maybe longer. I mean, she's got that fight against Joanne Calderwood. We were talking before we started recording this podcast, the fact of, you know, you look at that top 15, you know, there's going to be some fighters that in 6 months from now probably aren't even a part of that division. They're at 125 pounds. You look at, you know, particularly, you know, someone like Joanne Calderwood of fighting there at 125 pounds. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the 150-pound division, there's not a lot of things that get you excited about who is going to challenge Ioana Jędrzejczyk, and just it was a great performance by her.
By the way, shout out to Jessica Andrade. I'm a Mr. Awkward. I guess we could talk about two different awkward moments. One was just kind of funny, one more emotional regarding Ioana. But the first awkward moment I want to talk about is Andrade proposing to her girlfriend, Jason. When I think of proposal, I don't know if I want Joe Rogan to be the mediator, man. That was awkward. Why couldn't she get a girlfriend in the cage?
That was part, like, if you're going to do that, would you want the girlfriend to be in the cage with you?
Yeah. Maybe it's one of maybe if you lose a fight, you don't have that type of pool, right? If you lose five rounds, you don't have the pool to get your own entourage in the cage. But happy for them. That was just very awkward. My life is so awkward, so I always value that. But, I mean, there was another awkward moment, right, with Ioana that was a bit weirder.
In terms of during the week?
No, during the post-fight press conference.
Oh yeah, where Ariel brings up the question about one of the coaches that's leaving American Top Team, and there's a lot of rumblings going. I'll just leave it at that. That are going around about American Top Team, and
but how crazy is the reaction? Like, poor Ariel. Who, I mean, look, Ariel, I love him because.
But Ariel, I guarantee you, Ariel knows what's going on.
He knows what's going on, but he's got to ask the question. I mean, that's a good point. So now we're going to analyze Ariel Helwani here. But this is very interesting because he always asks the hard questions, which journalists should ask. The post-fight press conference should not be a public relations fest. But if you take into account that he asked the hard questions, despite the fact that he knows the answer, there is something weird there. I wouldn't blame anybody in that situation. But if he hadn't seen the post-fight press conference, he asked her about one of the guys leaving ATT, and like immediately she starts crying.
Yeah, it's
that sucks for everybody involved, man. I don't blame anybody. That's just super awkward.
Oh, it was also great was during during one of the press conference where it's Frankie's up there, Damian Maya's up there, and Ariel asks a question. Frankie just starts laughing. Goes, man, you love stirring the pot, don't you?
Yeah, but that's his job. I mean,
no, it is our job. Yeah. But there are a lot of times, as you know, someone who interviews a lot of fighters, where we already know the answer to the question we're asking, but we want it to come out of the fighter's mouth. We don't want it to come out of our own mouth.
It was a question that should have been asked, in my opinion. It should have, absolutely, because it's interesting. When you have the best fighter in her division, one of the best fighters on the planet, having a change in coaches is always significant and worth asking.
And especially the fact that she just joined ATT 7-8 months ago.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, and you give Ioana a lot of credit where she said, you know what, I have to take my game to another level, not just in the cage, but out of the cage, moves from Poland to South Florida, bought a house down there. She trains down there. And, you know, she's now represented by Paradigm Sports Management, which she confirmed that, which was a rumor that was going around in MMA circles. I probably heard about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago that she had, you know, was signed with Paradigm. And, you know, there was an awkward moment embedded where Jessica Andrade is represented by Ioana's ex-manager, Tiago Akamura. And there's a moment where all three of them are right next to each other during bed. I'm like, oh, that's awkward smiles going on there where you're thinking, man, yeah, you just lost a lot of money losing Ioana as a client. But, you know, I kind of like I look at that Ioana Rose matchup and, you know, to me, is putting it on Fox the best move?
Yeah, I think so, because it's my general thesis is you got to get your person over before you put them on pay-per-view. And at this point in time, sorry, take a drink. Ioana Jędrzejczyk is not super over in terms of pay-per-view. It's a shame.
And she has a fighting style that everyone loves.
Yeah. Maybe you'd like to see her get first round victories. But like, that's working well for Stipe. It certainly is not. So, I mean, what the hell am I talking about here? So you want to get her over. You want to figure out how to get her over. And the best way to get her over is put her where people don't have to pay money other than cable bills, Jason, to watch her. Fox is the avenue. It gives you the best opportunity to have a large amount of people watch her be dominant. By the way, that's the type of fight where Rose is a tough one to beat. But maybe Joanna does get the finish there, or maybe that fight is just badass. That could happen too. Rose does have that type of spirit that even when there's a talent divide, I think she could make it close and have some interesting exchanges both on the ground and on the feet. So put that on TV, Jason. Main event it. Give it the full treatment. When you are lucky enough to have a fighter like Joanna that has that personality that is just awesome, and the fighting style that is legendary, the success in the cage that is legendary, you got to capitalize on it. Because here's the list of marketable fights the UFC has in the books. John Jones versus Daniel Cormier.
And that's it. But by the way, speaking of women's MMA, in terms of, you know, kind of Joanna being on Fox, you know, there was a tweet that went out on Friday from Chris Cyborg, which it clearly was not sent out by her. It was sent by someone from her team. And I love the fact of just putting out bold-faced lies. And the tweet was, Holly, Misha, Joanna all have fought on Big Fox. All three have also fought on FS1. I've never fought on Fox, but my fight on FS1 beats all three in ratings. First off, that's a flat-out lie. First off, Joanna's never, and I responded to this tweet just hoping that the person running her account would respond, and then I was going to fire back with another part of it. Joanna's never fought on Big Fox, so there's lie number one in this tweet. And her only main card fight on FS1 peaked at 1.324 million, which was just under what Cyborg's fight on FS1 did at 1.326. And Misha has only fought on FS1 once, and it was at 2 million people.
Yeah,
it's literally. it's like, come on, before you send that tweet out, whoever is sending that tweet out for Cyborg, like, do your research, because when people like myself with fall television ratings can point out the fact of you're just lying, I mean, come on. And it's just, ugh.
Well, the thing is, like, yo, John Jacek was literally in a fight where the winner got a title shot on a Fox card, and that was still on FS1. Like, it's so dumb.
No, her fight on Fox, it was, because I looked it up, and I'll double check it here again.
I double checked. It was on FS1. The prelim, Dos Santos Miocic, when she fought Claudia, that fight was on FS1, unless Wikipedia is lying to me, which is possible.
No, remember, you know, yeah, that's FS1 preliminary fight.
Exactly. But, that's what I'm saying. The opportunity to put her on a main card, they still didn't do it. They put Maitreon Gonzaga over that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be fair, that
but we didn't know what Joanna was back then.
But it was a title eliminator. It was a number one contenders fight, which one would assume if you have a fighter, the winner gets a championship fight, one would assume you would put that in one of the four slots for TV. Still, man, Cyborg. It's one of those situations with Kristen Cyborg where we've been following her career for so long. And at some point, when you look at all the headaches that she's been a part of, maybe it's not them, it's her. I mean, so often, there's so many. She's such a talented fighter, but there's just so many different stories of like just things not running smoothly, and she's always the victim. And it's like, dude, just be a badass fighter. I
think it's one of those things where I think sometimes it becomes kind of this noise in the background because that's all that happens out there. You know, there's talks of a Sangano matchup, but that fight hasn't been offered to either party yet. You know, I mean, look, it's, you know, Cyborg, I think, you know, for in terms of an FS1 fighter, I think she's an ideal fighter. She'll bring television ratings, but I don't think she moves the needle on pay-per-view.
No, unless the other opponent does, which is
like she was on that 198 pay per view, which I think the rumor was it sold 217,000 pay per views. Mm. That's not moving the needle.
No, it's not. I mean, maybe you just got to put Dave Branch in there. Headline Dave Branch.
I mean, look, you know, it's you know, Dave Branch. He did what he does, but also this main card, Damian Maia, we think has finally secured that title matchup against Tyrone Woodley. We think. I thought this was a clear victory for Damian Maia. I had it 30-27. Have no problems if you think it's 29-28, but it was interesting the fact that two of the three judges scoring this fight actually gave the first round to Jorge Masvidal, which I was interesting to me. Damian's got a style that doesn't entertain a lot of people, you know, but it's effective. You know, give him credit. The guy should be next for Tyron Woodley.
I don't know if you've seen the MMA rule book, section 273, clause A, right under the fact that Kim Winslow and Steve Mazzagatti can't referee anymore. Under that is, if Jorge Masvidal loses a UFC fight, it has to be via split decision. That's actually what transpired, Jason. It was a clear win for Maia. You know, Masvidal talked a lot before the fight, and poor guy. Damian Maia is just really good. He's really good at bringing the fight down. I mean, Masvidal survived. He didn't get tapped out, which is almost an accomplishment on its own. You should almost get a box of Girl Scout cookies for not getting tapped out. It's just a tough one, man. Maya's established himself as the clear-cut number one contender. It's not a fight where you leave it saying, I can't wait to watch the fight happen. But if you're calling yourself a sport, it has to happen. And looking forward to it. I think Tyron Woodley, is got to be a decent favorite there, Jason. But I'm looking forward to that fight. I don't know if that's a main event or a co-main event. But I think the UFC is going to have their hand forced and run that as a main event.
Maybe that's got to be the main event of International Fight Week.
Oh, wow. That could be good. That's a good idea. I mean, Woodley Maia ain't going to do big business, but it at least
gives you value.
It gives you value, bang for your buck. I mean, that's a great five-fight card. Yeah.
This question is, does Maia want to return in 2 months?
Yeah, he waited so long, right? And now they're calling for him to do the quick turnaround for a title shot. But, you know, the fight business is one that makes zero sense.
Yeah. Jorge Masvidal, you know a fight I'd like to see him there at 170? Him and Stephen Thompson.
Ooh, yeah.
Because that would just be a fun fight.
Totally, totally. Guys that have been around for a while. And they would simply, literally, the betting odds for them being the fight of the night would be like -7,000. That, I would assume, would be a stand-up affair, Jason. And Masvidal would probably give Thompson some issues to quip with, to have an issue with. But that's a fight I'd favor Thompson in.
Yeah. Frankie Edgar, whenever you are, you're Rodriguez. And it was interesting after the fact of Malky Kawa basically insinuates that Yair Rodriguez left Izzy Martinez's team, which of course everyone knows Izzy Martinez, a great wrestling coach. I guess apparently Yair is now managed by his striking coach and thought it was a great idea for him to leave his wrestling coach, which is you know, just crazy. But the right call was made at the end of the second round to stop that fight. Just a dominating performance by Frankie Edgar. I thought the first round was a 10-8 round, just pure domination, but it just showed that there is a difference between being a top 10 fighter and being a top 5 fighter.
In the featherweight division, there's a difference between being a top 3 fighter and being everybody else. It's Aldo Holloway, Edgar, and then there's a big gap. Edgar kicked this dude's ass, and I did not expect that to happen. This was a big time. It's like if you're a fan of an NFL team, for example, the Texans, and you're feeling good about your season. You're like 4-0. You got to win over the Jaguars and the Titans, and you finally have the big Monday night football matchup against the Patriots, and they blow you out of the water with Jacoby Brissett. It's the same deal. You feel great about Yair, and he's going to have a great career, obviously, but he's got to get himself in order in terms of his camp, and once he gets that in order and he puts in the hard work, this guy's likely going to be a fighter long-term that's going to challenge for a title. But Edgar said, not today, my friend. And now Edgar, with this win, has to be rooting for Max Holloway.
Oh, he is the president of the Max Holloway fan club at this point.
He's buying the fighter kits. He's got a little Jose Aldo doll. He's poking the knee. I mean, man, even if Aldo wins, you almost have to do that fight. But it would be rough to do Edgar Aldo number 3. But
if Aldo wins, I think they do Aldo Swanson.
I mean, it's not like Aldo hasn't beaten Swanson.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you can't go that quickly back to a third fight between Aldo and Edgar when Aldo's already won the two previous matchups.
Yeah. The way I would market Swanson Aldo is like I would go all the way back to that WEC fight. You marketed like Cub Swanson was on top of the world. And then out of nowhere, Jose Aldo, this unknown, comes out and embarrasses him in 8 seconds. And that sent Swanson in the spiral. But since then, he's fought back to climb out the mountain and take out Aldo. That's how I would market that fight. And I think you're right, actually. Don't get me wrong. Beating Artem Lobov ain't too damn impressive, but that Duho Choa fight was awesome. And Swanson's kind of been around for so long. You feel good about him getting a title.
Yeah,
but, so, yeah.
But it's like we said, if you're Frankie Edgar, you are absolutely rooting for Max Holloway. Okay, he needs Holloway to win, because if Holloway wins, then I think Edgar is next.
So if Aldo does win and Edgar doesn't get a title shot, what does he do?
He was pretty, you know, set on he's staying at 145 pounds, but you know, it's he's in a rough position. I mean, and he can only look at himself in the mirror on this one because he's had his opportunities against Aldo and he hasn't been able to get the job done.
Yeah, and some of the UFC 156 bout, the first one, I thought was awesome for him. I mean, he had nice moments.
It was a close fight, mm-hmm. But 200 wasn't.
No, it was not. So we shall see. But again, Edgar, he isn't going to move up the rankings because he's already pretty much where he is. But he looked great. It was like a checkup. You get a checkup every year with your doctor to make sure your body's on all cylinders. And Frankie Edgar is firing all cylinders. Yair Rodriguez has got to do a little bit of soul searching. But at the end of the day, not really. He's a young guy, and Edgar is just a beast. And Rodriguez will be one too someday.
You just got to put Yair in a fight where the guy's going to stand with him. You can't put him in there against a wrestler because we saw what happens there. But, I mean, look, the future is still high on him. Let's get a couple other notes in here before we get out of here. Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, no contest due to the illegal knees landed by Eddie Alvarez there in the second round. Personally, I thought it should have been a DQ win for Dustin Poirier. This is, another perfect example of why instant replay should be used in MMA for these type of situations. But the odd part about this whole situation to me is Herb Dean going up to Mark Ratner, who is the director of regulatory affairs for the UFC, and he's basically trying to get the approval of Mark Ratner of what he saw. What if Ratner goes, no? What happens? Does Dean just change and say, oh, we're going to DQ? I mean, because when you watch the replay, it looks like after he lands the first illegal knee, Herb Dean says he's a downed opponent. You know, obviously it was not intentional by Eddie Alvarez. It happened. First off, I think you should just run this fight back, but I do think that if I was Dustin Poirier, I would try to appeal to get this to a overturn to a disqualification win.
Yeah. That's why you have people in your management to deal with those things. I mean, that's probably going to be annoying, but you should do that just to have your record a little prettier. It probably should have been a DQ when you think about it, when you watch the fight, and replay would have been beneficial. I mean, just an easier process to reevaluate a fight within a short period after the card is over to change the result needs to be in place at the end of the day. I mean, today we should be talking about this being a DQ, not a no contest. You know, Eddie's built a reputation where you would never say that he's a dirty fighter. It just happens. If he does it next time, then maybe we can call him Dirty Eddie Alvarez. But today we can't. Run it back. Tell you what, Poirier really impressed me at this one. This was a great fight, but he had more successful moments than I would have anticipated. In fact, I felt like if this fight had gone all three rounds, he may have won the decision. So I would like to see this fight again. And I think if you're Eddie, you feel like you want to prove yourself again, you want to have this fight. And if you're Dustin Poirier, I think you feel good about your ability to beat Eddie Alvarez, who is just a highly respected lightweight. Yeah. So let's run it back.
Yeah, and I definitely think let's run it back. But I think that's a perfect example of needing instant replay there. James Vick, TKO in the first round against Marco Polis Reyes after the fight, basically saying, come on, UFC, promote me a little bit. So we'll see if that happens. James Vick now 7-1 in the UFC. Courtney Casey, decision win against Jessica Aguilar. It was great seeing a fighter on her back, you know, who was absolutely scoring, and who really knows what goes on with Jessica Aguilar. Would not surprise me if the UFC just departs ways with Jessica Aguilar to where she's at in her career. Enrique Barzola gets a win, decision winner of Gabriel Benitez, and I'm not even going to try to butcher Angulov's first name. By the way, if anyone didn't see the ceremonial weigh-ins, just watch the very first part of it when Joe Rogan sees his name and he goes, "Oh my."
Jason, it's Gad's humor ad on Tingilov.
Okay, all right, cool. I'm figuring now the fact that he's got these two wins in the UFC, I've got to figure out how to say his name.
Yeah, man, he made it easy, bro. It was like a playbook. It's like you set up a mechanical bike, and it's like step one, take your opponent down. Step two, grab his back. Step three, lock on a choke. And that's what he did to Joachim Christensen. We got to figure it out. We got to learn it. He looks good at light heavyweight, and they need people to look good there. Speaking of not looking good, you're right. Jessica Aguilar, the expectation of what she was able to could do in the UFC did not meet the reality, and not looking good there. Casey, love to see her. Almost like a female version of Jason Knight with her ability to score points off of her back. And then James Vick took care of business. His resume is very, very impressive when you look at the wins and losses.
Yeah, and when it comes to the fight night bonuses, fight of the night, Chase Sherman and Rashad Coulter. Performance of the nights go to Stipe Miocic and Jason King. So that is UFC 211. The next UFC card will be coming up on Sunday, May the 28th from Stockholm, Sweden. UFC Fight Night 109, Gustafsson versus Teixeira. The co-main event of that fight card, Volkan Oezdemir versus Misha Cirkunov. Also, Peter Sabata, Ben Saunders, a part of that fight card. Of course, myself and Daniel Gavon will have a preview of that fight card here coming up the week of that fight. Also, don't forget, coming up this week, you do have Bellator 179, Rory McDonald versus Paul Daly. We'll have a preview of that card coming up on Wednesday's episode of the MMA Report podcast. Also on Friday, you have Titan FC. It's got a fight card. Also, we've LFA's got a fight card on Access TV on Friday night. So a ton of MMA to take in on Friday night. Of course, always you want to be following myself on Twitter at Jason_4. Follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com. Also available iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. All you have to do is search the MMA Report, subscribe, rate, review. I appreciate everyone who does that and listens to each episode of the MMA Report podcast. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report post-fight podcast. I'll be back on Wednesday for the next episode of the MMA Report podcast.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
To talk about where we are right now with engaging, you know, we have an opportunity with our staff, and I say this all the time, we had an opportunity to create the greatest experience for our guests, to exceed the expectation of what our guests want. And HAD for me is very simple. HAD stands for Hooters, American Airlines, and Disney. When you work at Hooters, you wear the orange shorts. It's something I say all the time. And that comes from an expectation. If you go and apply for a job at Hooters, you're not applying for a job there and saying, "I can't wait to get there so that I can wear my blue jeans." You're taking that job saying, "I know I have to wear the orange shorts." And it's the standard of Hooters to have those orange shorts. It is the standard that that's what you wear. You wear a white t-shirt, you wear nude leggings, you wear sneakers, you wear orange shorts. Doesn't matter. If you're going to work there, that's what you're going to wear. American Air. When you get on the plane, there's three things that you know. First and foremost, you're going to put your seat back in the upright position. You're going to put that tray table in the back seat position, and you're going to buckle your seatbelt. That's the way that it works. The flight attendant walks down and checks you. If you're sleeping, she's going to wake you up to make sure that that seatbelt's on. It's the way that the game works. You do that because you know that that's the standard. And Disney. If you know Disney, you know one thing. You fucking smile, man. You're walking that floor, you're walking that park, you're walking across from place to place, you smile. And if not, then you don't work there anymore. But with that comes the responsibility for us as owners to be able to get our, what I call nuts, because I say all the time that I'm a little bit crazy. So to get our nuts, which are non-negotiable, unalterable terms, systems, and standards. These are things that I believe in that every single employee that works for me has to know. They need to know our core values, and they need to know our mission statement. They need to know what it is that I expect from them when it comes to a greeting and when it comes to service. Other things will fall into place from a general manager, but from an owner standpoint, I've got to make sure that the people that I am putting in place are able to execute those things, whether they believe them or not. Because you know what? I'm sure that somewhere along the way, there was somebody who said, I don't know why I have to wear these orange shorts, but guess what? They're not working there anymore.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.